The renewable energy construction space is booming, and coupled with this trend is an increasingly complex insurance landscape, which needs to be navigated in a way that minimizes risk for developers. More projects have led to a higher claims frequency brought on by extreme weather, contractor error, and defective equipment. Furthermore, it's creating a great deal of strain on the available workforce and supply chain. These were some of the findings highlighted in a new report from G-Cube. And to learn more about these findings, I'm joined by Josh Shumali, Head of Onshore Underwriting at G-Cube. Josh highlights top causes of losses in the industry and delves into the crucial insurance and risk management lessons from the past that we need now more than ever to ensure project success. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today. We're talking about quite a complex topic, which is, of course, insurance in the renewables construction space. But before we delve into those details, tell us a little bit about G-Cube and, of course, your role at the firm.
Sure. So G-Cube is a leading specialist in renewable energy. We've been in the space for over 25 years now, providing insurance solutions to project owners and developers. We insure over 100 gigawatts of renewable energy projects under construction and in operation in over 40 countries around the world. G-Cube was acquired by Tokio Marine back in 2020, and that was part of the plans from Tokio Marine Group, really to grow products and platforms to support the green energy revolution. So my role at G-Cube within that setting has been to shape and set the underwriting strategy for onshore side of the business. And that's really wind, solar, and battery energy storage, and ensure that we are delivering results that allow us to be a sustainable business and partner up with project owners and developers for the lifetime of their projects.
Thanks, Josh, for explaining that to us. And I think, you know, the reason why I wanted to chat with you today is specifically about one of the latest reports from G-Cube. And I was really struck by the title of this report. And just to share that with our listeners, it's Arrested Development, Managing Complex Claims in the Boom and Bust World of Renewables Construction. Wow, it's saying a lot in a few words there. And I think it really gives us insight into the current construction climate. So tell us a little bit about, first of all, the title of the report, but also briefly about the context in which the report was written.
So the title's a bit of a play on words and taken from the sitcom Arrested Development, as you can imagine. Unlike the fictional world of Californian real estate, the renewable energy developments have come on leaps and bounds since the early days. However, it's not immune from its own examples of arrested development, and that's where projects grind to a halt and are faced with sudden unforeseen circumstances. And we've seen this play out a number of times over the last few years.
Josh, I'd like to delve into the specifics of the report. I think what really became clear to me was just the variety of risks that the industry is facing and the potential effects of those risks. And it was really interesting for me. You've broken it down into the onshore and the offshore sectors, and you refer to some of these boom-bust cycles. Now, obviously, I'm no expert, so please go into detail and explain these findings to us.
Sure. So as you've touched on, the renewable energy space has evolved massively in the last 10 years. And whilst it's been around for a long time and people are getting more used to seeing projects near their houses and in their neighbourhoods, the space is still in its infancy. And people are still figuring out what does and doesn't work and looking at best practices and finding ways to streamline the process to keep costs down and to ensure that we can deliver these projects for everyone's benefit. I think the key risks that we have seen over the last 25 years that continue to change in the environment that we operate really varies between the two different technology types, as you mentioned, being onshore and offshore. Now, in the onshore space, we see weather and natural catastrophe as a significant driver for the industry. And I think on the offshore side, it changes a little bit and we see more defective equipment, defective design and contractor error in that space. Now, these are not the only risks that we see. There's a whole host of risks that we see both in onshore and offshore technology, but these are the significant drivers for us in terms of the performance of the sectors and our own claims data as well, which suggests that these are the main risks that people should be concerned about. When we look at contract error and defects on the offshore side of things, there's been a significant amount of projects that have come to market in the last 4 or 5 years. But what we are seeing is that contract error and defects represents a higher claims frequency now at 63% in 2022, which was up from 55% in 2020. It's not a significant uptick on paper, but when you consider the number of projects and the size of the projects that have come to market, as a monetary amount, that's a fairly large number. And looking at the onshore side, it's a similar story around the Nat Cat, natural catastrophe and extreme weather, as I touched on. And when considering wind and solar, 48% of construction losses by severity are attributable to severe weather and Nat Cat. And then that's followed by contractor error.
Those are remarkable statistics, 48% losses because of weather and natural catastrophes. First of all, before we even delve into the offshore findings, I mean, obviously, with an increase in climate change impacting our weather, I mean, this is not a situation that's going to improve. We will surely see these kinds of impacts increase and have a greater impact on losses and claims.
We think so, for sure. I think it's a process of understanding the data that is present, but also looking forward and recognizing that the data is going to continue to evolve like the industry is. Every single week that goes by, there's news about a further severe weather event or natural catastrophe event around the globe. And that is something that often does not model, does not flag up on, you know, traditional systems and historical data. So whilst we have to utilise the data that we have to hand to carry out our jobs as insurers, we also have to look at what hasn't happened yet and how likely those scenarios are to be able to inform our clients and customers and help them better mitigate those risks.
And then, of course, Josh, you touched on the offshore space, which I find particularly interesting, especially as you highlighted defective equipment and contractor error. These have serious implications. And I think we've seen a few offshore wind, for example, projects that have suffered delays and cancellations because of these issues. And I just wonder if you could expand on that a little bit and how this is really impacting the sector overall. And I mean, how do we address these risks? I realize that this is quite a big question, but I mean, it's really had an impact and we've just seen in the headlines how this is an issue coming to the fore, specifically in the offshore space.
Correct. It's a very, very big question and lots of different points in that question that we can probably explore. But I think the big point here comes around this term that we keep using, which is the boom and bust cycle. There was significant investment and desire to build offshore wind projects because of the more flexible regulations and obviously the impact on land. The risk and challenges that comes with that is that everything within that process that's needed to build these offshore projects gets strained. Then we talk about supply chain, we talk about contractors or experienced contractors, vessel availability in offshore. It all gets to a point where there is too much demand and not enough service, experience, equipment to deliver these projects. And what happens when there is an incident at one of these projects, whether it be from defective design or an unexpected failure, is that it's difficult to get the right people out to the project. It's difficult to get the necessary vessel out to site to deal with it because they've got a job card laid up for the next 2 years. So that puts further strain on the project owner. It puts further strain on insurers and the claims that are presented to insurers and ultimately makes it a very difficult market to navigate in terms of being sustainable and having a product offering that is able to tick everyone's box.
You touched on some of the flexible regulation, and I think that there's been a lot of work done, especially in the US through the IRA, for example, to try and create a policy environment that really fosters development. But it seems like despite those policy changes, you know, there's still these roadblocks and pitfalls. Like you said, for example, it's creating too much demand and pressure on the supply chain. Is that something that can be addressed through policy?
That's a difficult one. I think there are ways of addressing it, but I think there needs to be a sensible conversation had about how we implement these desires to build out more renewables and to have a greener environment. At the moment, what we see is that there's a drive to reduce the levelized cost of energy, and ultimately the pitfalls of that brings everybody's margins down. People are at a point where they're strained, they're stretched, they're not making money. And that doesn't help deliver the best quality projects on time in the right fashion. I think that sends the wrong message to everyone that's trying to deliver these projects. Rather than to do a top quality job and deliver the best equipment and the best project design, let's just do it quickly, let's do it cheaply, let's move on to the next one so that we can keep up with this desire to build more projects.
That's an interesting dilemma indeed. Josh, obviously the report does focus a great deal on the US market, but are there specific trends that you are noticing across the board globally that you could highlight for us?
Yes, I think the report is quite heavily focused on our data, which is drawing from the US market. I think the report scope is a global scope, though, and really reflects the key trends that are emerging, not just in the US, but in other territories that are seeing significant construction booms as well. Two key areas which come to mind are the Middle East and Asia, both territories where there's been significant drive to install and deliver renewable energy projects. But there's also an inherent lack of data in lots of these locations. We saw this in the US in previous years where, I'll call it the good land was taken for developments of, you know, properties, hospitals, communities. And what was left was land that could not be used for habitable buildings. So what else do you do with it? You put solar panels, you put wind farms on those to utilize it and to generate electricity and hit our targets from a renewables perspective. We're seeing the same thing in the Middle East, in Asia, where there just isn't data because there's nothing, nobody's lived there, nothing's been built there in the past. These are empty areas that we don't understand the natural perils, we don't understand the weather risks in that region to be able to properly mitigate that risk.
Something I would like to touch on briefly, you know, in the report, you talk about some of the top 10 losses over the last decade. And I think it would be interesting for our listeners to hear that and just to get an idea of what those losses are.
Sure. So the top 10 losses, as I've mentioned, really draw out differently in on and offshore. I think, you know, my expertise is the onshore side of things. So focusing on that more so, the top 10 losses on onshore, as I said, were severe weather, natural catastrophe, natural perils. And these were losses that I won't sit here and say that we didn't expect, but they're losses that felt like they were rare cases and possible, but very, very unlikely. So some of the significant ones in our report that we talk about are flood losses to wind construction projects. But we've also got wildfire losses in there. We've also had tornadoes and severe convective storms go through construction projects. And where these projects 10, 15 years ago may have been $50 million, $60, $70 million in value, these projects are now $300, $400, $500 million plus in value. So when one of these weather events goes through a project site, the losses that are drawn out of this are significant. And that's really led to a lot of pressure in the insurance market around how we deal with limitation of coverage and restriction on coverage to make it a sustainable business model for us in the market. I think some of the losses that have come through are of a size that even the best modelers, even the best actuaries did not account for, did not expect. And that's tough for a project owner, as well as us as insurers, obviously, to stomach some of these losses over the longer period of time.
A great segue into my next question, because you've painted this picture, so we understand the landscape, the risks that we're all facing, but how to make that insurance business model sustainable? How do we do that? I know that the report does make some recommendations covering all of these risks and how to manage them effectively, but the sustainability of the insurance business, it feels like it's really having to adapt and evolve in this new landscape.
It definitely does. You know, as I touched on at the start, there's a number of projects that we've seen in recent times that have not got the green light to proceed because of various reasons. You know, some of those reasons come down to the fact that they can't find suitable insurance solutions for the project that they wish to build. Now, a lot of that is really stipulated around project location, but also project technology that's had defects, issues known in the market. We've made some recommendations in the report, which are really from our perspective to our clients and project owners and developers about how best you navigate those conversations with your insurance broker and your insurers at the end of the day. And some of those recommendations are around having, you know, robust baseline for projects and utilizing project monitoring to make sure that projects are on time and projects are being managed properly by the contractors at site. This also helps everybody be on the same page if something were to go wrong and a loss were to occur. It means that you get a quicker response from your insurer. The insurer knows exactly where the project's at, what the delay is likely to be. So there's multiple benefits of using project monitoring. I think also our project owners and developers fully understanding the insurance policy that they are buying. There's been a drive towards a streamlined insurance buying process in the last 10 years, which is referred to as OSIP, or Owner Controlled Insurance Programs. Now, they name everybody involved in the project under a insurance policy that the project owner is buying. If a contractor or a subcontractor comes along, does not deliver their best quality work and causes a loss, it is the insurance buyer, the project owner, that is left with that loss on their loss record. They're going to be paying the premium for that going forward for the remainder of the project life. So I think project owners and insurance buyers really need to understand what they are buying and make sure that they are not taking fault for someone else's error at the end of the day. And I think beyond that, it's really looking at utilizing trusted contractors and suppliers. Yes, with an opportunity in renewables, like there is significant growth, there's going to be lots of people that move into the space to try their hand and try and benefit from the growth opportunities. But maybe paying a little bit more for someone more expensive that's got more experience, that's able to deliver a project of top quality, that's a more sustainable approach in our view, rather than going for whoever's available and whoever may be cheapest. But again, it brings you back into that battle of reducing the levelized cost of energy, reducing project expense to be able to deliver the project in the first place.
That is indeed a fine balance between risk and reward, and a lot to consider. Josh, a final question to you. The report states that we are heading into the busiest period of construction in history, renewables construction. And that is obviously very exciting, considering the progress of the energy transition and decarbonization. But also, and I'm quoting, the market must ensure that crucial insurance and risk management lessons learned from the past two decades are not forgotten. Unquote. And I think this is my final question to you. How do we ensure that the lessons that we've learned can be kept front of mind and applied in the future?
I think a lot of that is about sharing data and sharing experience. We have the benefit of 25 years plus of data and underwriting business in that time with various different challenges. because of the opportunity in renewables, there are a lot of insurers in the market that have decided to make that leap into the space in the last 2 years. Now, they don't have that data. They would not have seen the previous construction booms and cycles. So we have to play our part in sharing our data. And that's exactly what we try to do with our report we've issued, but also conversations like this, you know, explaining the some of the pitfalls of this construction boom, because a lot of people are looking at it saying, well, okay, construction for renewables, it's the next big thing. Let's go mad. Let's fill our boots and make sure that we're taking advantage of this opportunity. But what we've seen in the past and we'll likely see again is that people will jump into that space. They may have a bad time and they'll quickly retract. And if they quickly retract from the space, that means there's a lack of certainty for project owners. It means projects won't get their insurance renewed. They may not find the insurance they're expecting to find from the outset when they're looking to develop a project. So it means instead of having a nice flat line over 10, 15, 20 years, you have an up and down cycle. And I don't think that is a sustainable practice. I had someone make a quote to me a couple of months back, which I quite liked, and it's insuring sustainability unsustainably. And I think that is a good summary of the market as it seems right now, which surely we can do better. Yeah, there's a greater good in us delivering these projects and supporting them and playing our part in making sure they get the green light. Let's take a step back. Everyone can find a way to do this by making a bit of money and being a profitable business, but making sure they're delivered properly, sustainably over the next 25 years so we hit our targets that we all have. I think some of the granular detail that we can dig into beyond just sharing this data is, you know, everybody looking with that in mind, looking at the project and highly concentrating on the risk management approach and utilizing insurance and claims expertise to deliver a project rather than just thinking, okay, how can we deliver this as quickly and cheaply as possible? And I think it's a well-planned project utilizing the right experts. It mitigates that risk of delay, that uninsured loss, unbudgeted expenses that comes as a shock, which then has a further impact on the financial model for projects over their lifetime. I think if we can utilize that experience upfront and early in the process, we can all come to the table with the best intentions to help deliver a project properly, of good quality and on time that helps us all.
Well said. Josh, I feel like this is really scratching the surface of this very complex discussion topic. So what I will do is include a link to the report below so our listeners can read up and get more detail about the specifics and what we've spoken about today.
Of course. No, thank you for the time.
And I'd like to thank our listeners for joining us. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.